It's all you, darling.
Hey everyone, I am Ricky. My name is Ricky, and I am an alcoholic. Thank you for letting me come on here tonight to share my story with the group. Do a little background about myself. I've been sober now 2 years. I actually celebrated my 2 year anniversary on December 21st, 2020. As Megan mentioned, Oh My God is my home group. I actually have three home groups. Oh My God, Reason and Recovery, and then I have a Maryland group that I visit online every Tuesday. And all three groups have been vital to my recovery. That's where I'm at now. But how did I get here? Right. I grew up in a home where I saw a lot of alcohol. My stepdad was an alcoholic, good man, loved me unconditionally, loved me like I was his own kid. Worked hard, but I used to see him come home every night with a 40-ounce of Budweiser from the package store. That's what we used to call them in the liquor stores in Massachusetts, Packies. And then, I grew up seeing a lot of that, a lot of alcohol. We would have big get-togethers. My dad would call, have his friends come over, cards. This is in the 80s when you could sit in the front on the little armrest as a kid. No one really gave two craps about your seat belts and whatnot. All right. My biological father was a he was an addict as well, and an alcoholic. So I kind of saw a little bit of what he was going through. So I say all that, or at least that much of it so far, because I truly believe we are a product of our environment. At least I know I am, right? I grew up with seeing that around me constantly. And so it was socially acceptable. When I got into my teens, I started dabbling. I remember the first time I got drunk, me and my cousins hung out by a store and had some Portuguese guy who barely spoke any English buy us alcohol. Paid him like 10 bucks back in the early 90s. Even dabbled as at a young age, you dabbled with drugs. Marijuana mostly, did acid once, absolutely hated it. So I wasn't afraid to live on the wild side. Even smoke cigarettes. Newports was my thing. Then when I hit 21, the floodgates opened. It was party time. And I enjoyed it. I got to go out legally drinking with friends. And at first it was just like weekends, right? And then eventually it slowly evolved into becoming more of a frequent thing. But a lot of it had to, I think some of it at that time in my life, it had to do with a lot of my own insecurities of myself as a young man at that time. In my early 20s, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I had a lot of self-esteem issues. I really struggled with anxiety, which progressively got worse as I got older. It became to the point, it got to the point where I was every night I was getting beer. In fact, one of the things that I was really happy to know that I wasn't the only one who did this, but I had a rotation of package stores that I would hit because there was a bit of shame even in my early 20s, like going into the same package store, like nice late old lady, older lady, probably in her 50s at this point when I was like in my early 20s. She would see me and give me this like side eye, like, "Oh, you're back," so I got into a rotation. I hit a different liquor store every night. And I got married at that, by the time I was 24, I got married, had a kid on the way, And so some of those insecurities and anxieties got a lot worse, right? Because like, am I going to be a good dad? Am I going to be able to provide for my wife and kid? And in a way, alcohol helped me alleviate some of those stressors, right? And so I knew at that point I had a problem. My wife tolerated it. Even at that, when we were young in our 20s, she tolerated it. And I tried to control it as much as I could. I tried to control it as much as I could. And then, I was able to maybe string a few days together and, just stick to light stuff, beer, occasional wine. But then when I turned 30, I discovered rum and Diet Coke. And that was a quick and easy way to get to really numb myself. And so that's what I ended up doing. I think it got to the point where the peak of my alcoholism, I was drinking a liter of rum in like 4 days. I would sleep, take a nap in the middle of, instead of eating my lunch at work, be so hungover. Instead of eating my lunch, I'd use my lunch break to go take a nap in the car to try to kind of reset myself, and then that night, I'd be back at it again, 7 o'clock. And it just started becoming a cycle that I just was not enjoying anymore. Right. I hit a point when my son was in middle school. Was about 2012. I had dropped him off. At this point, I was 34. Yeah. So I had dropped him off at school. And that morning, I was like, I'd had enough. Like, I was drinking to the point where I was blacking out. I couldn't remember. I couldn't remember conversations. And a lot of times, just going along with everyone, like, oh, yeah, I remember that conversation. Yeah, I remember that. And I had no freaking clue what they were talking about. But yeah, so this m one morning, I dropped my kid off, and I just remember hitting every stoplight, and at every red light, I had my iPhone because at the time I was doing implementation work. I had a company issued phone with unlimited data at that time, which was a big deal. And I was on Google searching for programs to get help. It was a Friday. I went into the office and I landed on a couple of potential places, right? But for the most part, what I was finding was an intense inpatient treatment programs, which was off the table. I had to work, couldn't be away from my family, and it was a main source of income. So I decided to call this. I decided I was going to call this one place. As actually not far from where I worked. So I went over to my boss at that time. It was like noon, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, or I think it was 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever. And I just remember saying, "Hey, Jason, I'm leaving. I'm just not feeling well." And, my job at that time allowed me that flexibility. I really didn't have a schedule. I just worked as long as work got done. The clients were happy. Go ahead, you can work from home. So my boss was like, "Go ahead." And I just remember calling this. I called the number, and I heard this older gentleman with a deep voice, Southern drawl. I was like, "Hey, this is all paraphrasing courses so long ago, about 10 years ago." I just basically told him like, "Hey, look, I need help, this and that." And he's all like, he said to me, he's like, "Well, yeah." He says, "Yeah, if you want to come by, come on by Monday morning." And I cut him off. I was like, "No," I go, "you don't understand." I says, "I'm on my way now." And he's like, he paused and he's like, "Okay." So he's like, "You know where we are?" I'm like, "Yep, about a mile or two down the road." And I drove there, Dr. Duke's office, Awaken and Recovery in Jacksonville, Florida. I walked into his office, sat down, and I just threw up my life and told him where I was and how desperate I was for help. And I'm glad I found that place, because I ended up going there for about 3 months. Once during the 3 times a week. So like I'd have an hour therapy session with them, almost like a sponsorship, right? Telling them what was going on in my life and how I felt. And then in the evenings, twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, I think it was, Wednesdays and Thursdays, we'd have like a group meeting. And it was a very small, intimate session. And so it was, we'd always start off with, "Hi, my name is Ricky. My choice of drug was rum and coke." And it was almost like, hey, anyway, I was able to string together 100 days of sobriety, but by that point, my Dr. Duke, he and I talked, and he said that my insurance company really wasn't covering anything, and I had racked up almost $3,000 in debt. And so he recommended that I do AA, and to and that he would work with me on paying off that debt that I had that I racked up going for his services. And so then I went to AA, but I hated the setting. It was with a bunch of old timers, and nothing against them, right? Nothing against them as traditional AA. It was but it was a very much a young man, you just sit down and you listen and listen to what the elders have to say. And I absolutely hated it. It was very insulting. Not almost, it was insulting, right? Like, hey, look, you know what I mean? I didn't come here to be told what to do or whatever. So I only went a couple of times because I was really turned off. And then I got a case of the fuck-ins, right? And I went back to my ways. And at that point, I became a professional relapser. And that was my life for the next few years. I'd be lucky if I could string together a couple of days and then I'd be back. And I tried to control my drinking by trying to limit the amount I would consume in one evening. And even going as far as asking my wife to hide the bottle for me. That was the rationalization that the dialogue I was having in my head at that time. Like, okay, she hides the bottle, it won't be that bad. And but that just really speaks to the disease itself, right? We try to trick ourselves, and we think we have control of it. It's bullshit. It controls us. So then I made a couple of more attempts. I'd go to AA a couple more times and just didn't work. And then finally in March of 2019, again, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I decided that this is it. I'm going to white knuckle it and I'm going to do what I can. And I managed to get through September without a single drink. And so I did fairly well. And then I got towards the end of 2019, I got a little too comfortable. In fact, I remember going to North Carolina for work, and I went to an Applebee's and I was like, fuck it, it's one beer, And then I'm like, one beer. And then I wouldn't have a drink for another week or so. Then I'd have another drink. And then it just picked up again from there. And then that got me back down into the rabbit hole with the rum and cokes again. Except this time around, my body was starting to tell me, like, Ricky, we can't keep doing this, dude. Like, it's getting bad at this point in my life. I would wake up in complete tachycardia in the middle of the night. I'd have to go downstairs and pace for an hour till my heart rate would come back down from like, oh, like 100, 120 beats a minute back down to something more normal. And I'm on a beta blocker for blood pressure, so it does a good job of slowing your heart down, that medication. And so my heart was going off the rails. Even waking up and having nocturnal panic attacks, and I should add that again, that that part of what got me started was my own anxiety and stress and all that, but that progressively got worse as my drinking continued and got worse, right? I feel fine the evening of drinking. The next morning or day, I would be a freaking mess. I would lose my composure in public places. I'd have to get up and leave. Flying was a task in itself, being cooped up in a tin can at 36,000 feet for upwards to 4 or 5 hours. And that's where I ended up, relying on benzodiazepines to get me through it. That was issued to my doctor, through my doctor. And even, at one point I made the genius idea of a decision to, hey, let's mix antidepressants with alcohol. And that was a recipe for disaster. Wouldn't recommend it. I was convinced that I was going to die in my sleep, and something had to give. And I chose alcohol over my own sanity. Alcohol was more important than trying to get my life in order, trying to control my mental health. Anywho, so pandemic hits, and I'm drinking like a mother every night, and about every week or so, I'm having a problem where I'm having nocturnal panic attacks, having a panic attack in the middle of the day, or just waking up to a racing heart for no reason. I think by September of 2020, I was like, okay, I got to give this up, right? Because I'm not going to live. I'm not going to make it to 50, right? I'm gonna be dead at a young age. And so it's when I stumbled, I went on online and I wanted to try AA. And this is where where I became a Zoom baby, right? I wanted to try AA again, but I wasn't comfortable going in public, and not like there was anything going on at that point, in public gatherings, because of we were in the midst of a pandemic. And so I ended up Googling non-religious AA, and I landed on Oh My God. As Megan said, that's how we met. And so I ended up dialing in, and I remember my the my first meeting with Oh My God, Max was hosting. And actually I actually finally got to meet Max the over the weekend, and I shared that with him, that he was hosting in my first meeting that I attended. I always remember that. And I went back and I fell flat on my face again, and then I did it a couple more times, and then finally Sunday, December 20th, I decided time to unwind again. And I started to pour myself some rum and cokes. I woke up at 2:30 in the morning, full-blown tachycardia again, couldn't catch my breath, and I was afraid that I was going to have to go to the hospital. And that was it. That was the tipping point. And I walked over into the garage, because that we have a refrigerator in our garage, and that's where I would put my bottle of rum would be up on top. Walked over, grabbed the rum, trying to catch my breath, and I just poured it down the drain and the wash tub in the laundry room. And that was it. I said to myself that I wasn't going to do this anymore again. I was going to die. I would be dead if I kept drinking, right? And besides, I've seen a couple of people die as a result of addiction. And it's not fun. In particular, it wasn't a pleasant experience for me, let alone whatever they were going through, right? Like, I was a young person, and I saw a family friend dying of liver disease, cirrhosis of the liver. Another gentleman in our neighborhood who, very nice guy, 40s, maybe a couple of years older than me, woke up. His wife woke up in the morning and found him dead. He was very open about his struggles with alcohol with me and my wife. And it turned out that he ended up dying from an enlarged heart and liver failure. And I know a lot of people think that, oh, alcohol is going to destroy your liver, this and that. And it's like, no, it does more than that. It wreaks havoc on our bodies, not just our liver, our cardiovascular system, right? And I didn't want that to be me. I didn't want my kid to walk in and see me laying on a hospital bed with a mask, oxygen being fed into me, like when I saw Larry, our friend, when I was 18, 19 years old. Saw him laying in the hospital being fed pure oxygen and he's laboring to breathe. And that was the last time I saw him. Or Corey's wife when she woke up. I didn't want my wife to wake up and see my cold dead body next to her. That's not what I wanted. And that was my time to take action in my own recovery. And so anyways, I decided, I was like, I'm gonna do 90 meetings in 90 days. And I started going to Oh My God. That's how I found I'd go to Oh My God 3 days a week. That's how I found the Maryland group. Go there on Tuesday nights, a Kansas City group on Thursday night, and then Saturdays and Sundays I'd find a random one. There was one in New York I would go to from time to time, but Saturdays and Sundays I'd be on in a meeting as well. And the times for Oh My God and Kansas City and Maryland were perfect because they were 7 o'clock at night, my time, Eastern time, and that was my time to shine. And so it kept me busy the first month. And so I was glad that I was able to hold it together at least the first few weeks, because that was really tough. I remember sitting in a restaurant picking up takeout for me and the family and looking at the bar, and I'm seeing everyone drinking, and I'm like, just the cravings, right, getting to me. And I just was like, I have to get out of here. So I started, attending meetings, and then within 4 months, I started helping out, or actually 6 months, I started doing service work at Oh My God as a way to, because I was getting kind of bored, I guess, and I didn't want to slip back into my BS, right? So I ended up started doing service work, and that kept me engaged in my recovery. And then by, I did that from, I've been doing that since, actually. In fact, I help out in some degree, not as much as I used to, but I still take part in the meetings, help, and I jump in a pinch whenever the groups need me or need somebody. And then I finally decided to go ahead and work through the steps. And it's funny, I jokingly say tell the story, but like when I walked up to my, well, not walked up because it was up on Zoom. When I approached my sponsor about sponsoring me, I was nervous as hell. Like you would have thought I was asking him to the prom. That's how scared I was. And I'm glad I went through the steps because it made me realize that I had a lot of work on myself to do. I learned about myself. I had a lot of baggage. That was toxic, right? And that's when I realized what AA in the steps was about. As time went on, I realized, yes, the fellowship is here to help keep us honest, right? But the program also taught me how to live life sober, how to deal with things in life without having to rely either on alcohol or trying to rely or having to fall back onto toxic traits. And so I encourage, newcomers to go through the steps, right? although not, I didn't do the traditional 12 steps. I went through Reason and Recovery 6 steps, which is just, to me, it just cuts out all the God stuff and it really focus. It's really centered on cognitive therapy. I didn't even realize that. And I remember the first session I had with my sponsor, I jokingly said to him, I'm like, dude, I feel like I should pay you for this because I got so much shit off my chest. And I'm thankful for the way things went, right? I've shared this with some of the folks at Oh My God, shortly after I got sober, my mother, who at the time was 67 years old, fell, broke her ankle with me on the phone. In fact, we were FaceTiming one another, and I had to call 911 for her. She was living in Massachusetts, and so I flew up to take care of her and help her out. And during that process, that first couple of months, we found out she had a mass in her liver. And it turned out to be cancerous. And so, I came home to be back with family. My mom was getting better as far as her physical rehab from her injury from the fall. And I flew back about a month later. Actually, I flew back for my son's birthday, who had just turned 20. And I flew back in May, the day of my mom's procedure, where they removed part of her liver, and we began chemotherapy, and I stuck with her for the next few months, caring for her and making sure she would be okay. I came back home again. She finished chemo, finished radiation treatment, and then I had to go back because cancer came back and it was worse. And so the reason why I say all that, I stuck with her to her last dying breath. I held her hand as she went. She brought me into this world, and I held her hand as she went out. But I was thankful that I could be there for her sober, be present in those moments, and to be there with a clear mind head, a clear mind to help her make some of the most difficult decisions, right? I don't know how I would have been if I was drinking. I'd be a complete fucking mess, probably. But I'm thankful that I was able to do that in recovery. And I was also thankful that she could see that I was getting my life together, that I was trying to work on myself. So yeah, that was up to last year and up to last September. And that's what happened with mom and as it relates to my recovery. But I also, 8 months into my recovery, kind of going back some more, I decided that it was time to address the what was it, like, 600-pound gorilla in the room, which is my mental health. I was still struggling with panic attacks and whatnot, and so I went back to the antidepressant that I had kicked to the curb a couple years prior, and my only regret was not doing it sooner, because I realized, like, a lot of the shit that I was dealing with was I was trying to suppress it with alcohol. I'd feel fine when I was drinking, and that's when I was felt comfortable in my skin and I felt calm. Now I'm like that, right? Thank God to a little blue pill called Zoloft. So yeah, things are, it's no longer a meltdown for me. I find joy in life now. It doesn't require alcohol. I think I realize I may have even had a bit of depression as well. Anybody who struggles with mental health, I encourage you to seek help, to find peace and calm in your life. We all deserve that. So yeah, So since getting sober, since all of that, I've actually had the opportunity to help others as well, through sponsorship. My first sponsee, I was scared because, like, the hell do I know about sponsoring? You know what I mean? I barely know what the hell I'm doing with myself, you know? But I was able to, I actually helped out a gentleman about my age, and it was great. And I'm currently sponsoring a young woman who is in, who I got to meet actually this weekend for the first time face to face. I mean, we've talked countless times on Zoom. Lovely young lady, and I'm so thankful for the opportunity to be there to help her. And I'm encouraging her to actually to sponsor at some point, or at least mentor. Helps keeps you know keep keeps us engaged in our own recovery, and also paying it forward and helping that next person that's coming in, sitting next to us at the meeting. Not literally, but that's kind of my journey in a nutshell. There is a good podcast. I don't know if we're allowed to plug any podcasts or anything like that, but there's a podcast by a gentleman who I met through oh my God. He has a podcast called Many Paths. And he shares his podcast. He interviews all these people, and I've listened to some of them. I've listened to almost all of them, and everyone's journey that I listen to is so intriguing. And so there's a lot that resonates with me, but it's just also like, wow, it's nice to hear that, n not nice to hear that people were suffering, right? But nice to know that the things that I hear, I wasn't the only one, you know? And it's also nice to see some of the newcomers go through their journey, how they evolve and grow. You know what I mean? To see them come in at collecting their white chip to suddenly doing service work, or even, even sponsoring someone. So that's some of the joys of the program itself. But yeah, I know we got a lot of time. I could keep going. About some of the I will share this, like, right? So one of the things that, like, when I first got into recovery, I lost my father to lung cancer in 2014. I told him that I was seeking help at this Awaken and Recovery. And my stepfather, mind you, my dad was my biggest cheerleader. He was there rooting me on every step of the way because he knew how difficult it was for him to control his own alcoholism. But by this point, though, he was retired in his almost 70, and he had slowed down quite a bit, which I was really proud of him to do. He was able to drink just like maybe one or two beers a day instead of drinking the 40 ounce but he was my biggest cheerleader, and I was very thankful for that. My only regret is that I wish he could have been around to see me actually stay sober. So what am I looking forward to now that almost 2 years into recovery? Well, I am 2 years into recovery. I want to continue helping people. I have an idea that I wanted to pitch to Raymond for his podcast, because he's interviewing more and more people. Just haven't had an opportunity to sit down and chat with him. But I want to do that. And I need to journal more, right? Journaling is important, I think. to getting to journaling, it's important, I find it important to help us, not hold in that toxic bullshit that we sometimes get ourselves caught into. So I need to do more of that. And I tell my sponsees, journal, 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 and I need to do the same. I'm a terrible leader, or not a leader, but I'm a terrible sponsor in that sense. So anyway, I'm going to give up the floor because I just threw up my life. I don't know much what else I can share other than what I've gone through. And I appreciate y'all inviting me. It means a lot to be able to share my story, anybody who might be new to the program here, lean into it, into the fellowship. Don't be afraid to pick up the phone, call somebody, text somebody. That's what we're here for. Thank you.